The 40-odd kids had their tents pitched within the stone walls of a church someone had built in an effort to bring a little more stability to the general havoc of boom towns in the Old West. Lucio had pitched her tent with them, but Ramirez, me, and two other young wardens who were helping her teach had set up our tents on the remains of what had once been a saloon, a brothel, or both. We'd taught kids all day and evening, and once it had gotten cold and the trainees were asleep, we played poker and drank beer. And if I got enough in me, I would even play a little guitar. Ramirez and his cronies got up every morning just as bright-eyed and bushy-tailed as if they'd had a full night's sleep. The cocky little bastards. Breakfast was dished up and served by the trainees every morning, built around several portable grills and several folded tables situated near a well that still held cool water, if you worked the weather-beaten pump long enough. Breakfast was little more than a bowl of cereal, but part of the little more was coffee, so I was surviving without killing anyone. If only because I took breakfast alone, giving the grumpy time to fade before exposing myself to anyone else. I collected my cereal, an apple, and a big cup of the holy mocha, walked a ways, and settled down on a rock in the blinding light of morning in desert mountains. Captain Lucio sat down beside me. "Good morning," she said. Lucio was a wizard of the White Council, a couple of centuries old, and one of its more dangerous members. She didn't look like that. She looked like a girl not even as old as Ramirez, with long, curling brown locks, a sweetly pretty face, and killer dimples. When I'd met her, she'd been a lean, leathery-skinned matron with iron-gray hair, but a black wizard called the Corpse Taker had succored her in a duel. Corpse Taker, then in Lucio's current body, had let Lucio run her through, and then Corpse Taker had worked her trademark magic and switched their minds into the opposite bodies. I'd figured it out before Corpse Taker had time enough to abuse Lucio's credibility, but once I'd put a bullet through Corpse Taker's head, there hadn't been any way for Lucio to get her original body back. So she'd been stuck in the young, cute one instead, because of me. She had also ceased taking to the field in actual combat, passing that off to her second-in-command, Morgan, while she ran the boot camp to train new wardens in how to kill things without getting killed first. "Good morning," I replied. "Mail came for you yesterday," she said, and produced a letter from a pocket. I took it, scanned the envelope, and opened it. "Who's it from?" she asked. Her tone was that of one passing the time in polite conversation. "Warden Yoshimo," I said. "I had a few questions for her about her family tree. See if she was related to a man I knew." "Is she?" Lucio asked. "Distantly," I said, reading on. "Interesting." At Lucio's polite noise of inquiry, I said, "My friend was a descendant of Shou Tai." "I'm afraid I don't know who that is," Lucio said. "He was the last king of Okinawa," I said, and frowned, thinking it over. "I bet it means something." "Means something?" I glanced at Captain Lucio and shook my head. "Sorry, it's a side project of mine, something I'm curious about." I shook my head, folded up the letter from Yoshimo, and tucked it into the pocket of my jeans. "It isn't relevant to teaching apprentices combat magic, and I should have my head in the game, not on side projects." "Ah," Lucio said, and did not press for further details. "Dresden, there's something I've been meaning to talk to you about." I grunted interrogatively. She lifted her eyebrows. "Have you never wondered why you did not receive a blade?" The wardens toted silver swords with them whenever there was a fight at hand. I had seen them unravel complex, powerful magic at the will of their wielders, which is one hell of an advantage when taking on anything using magic as a weapon. "Oh," I said, and sipped some coffee. "Actually, I hadn't really wondered. I assumed you didn't trust me." She frowned at me. "I see," she said. "No, that is not the case. If I did not trust you, I would certainly not allow you to continue wearing the cloak." "Is there anything I could do to make you not trust me, then?" I asked. "'Cause I don't want to wear the cloak. No offense." "None taken," she said. "But we need you, and the cloak stays on." "Damn." She smiled briefly. The expression had entirely too much weight and subtlety for a face so young. The fact of the matter is that the swords the wardens have used in your lifetime must be tailored specifically to each individual warden. They were also all articles of my creation, and I am no longer capable of creating them. I frowned and imbibed more coffee. Because, I gestured at her vaguely. She nodded. This body did not possess the same potential, the same aptitudes for magic as my own. Returning to my former level of ability will be problematical and will happen no time soon. She shrugged, her expression neutral, but I had a feeling she was covering a lot of frustration and bitterness. Until someone else manages to adapt my design to their own talents, or until I have retrained myself, I'm afraid that no more such blades will be issued.